is going for a walk in a beautiful spot so that you can quiet your mind, whether it's using a free meditation app. Just 10 or 15 minutes every day can make a huge difference. You think about how much that adds up over a course of a year.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode. This is what I do. I can't talk. Also, is there a particular way you want me to introduce you? I forgot to ask you that. Obviously.
I'm a functional medicine nurse practitioner that specializes in mental health. I guess that would be.
Okay. Functional medicine nurse practitioner that specializes in mental health. Functional medicine nurse. Okay, here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Own Your Awkward podcast. Today, I have somebody very special for you. I'm super excited. It is Sarah Weaver, and Sarah is a functional medicine nurse practitioner who specializes in helping people with mental health and finding solutions to live their best life. Sarah, I'm so glad to have you here. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Andy. I'm excited about this conversation.
It's going to be so fun. Sarah and I met through mutual friends and just clicked and hit it off. And I am so excited about all the things you do. And we've talked about it, but not, you know, in depth enough that I know a little bit about what you do, but I can't wait to learn more.
Yeah, I can't wait to share my story. And so thanks for having me. And let's get to it.
All right. Well, before we dig into your awkward, because we're going to ask you that in a second, I'd like to know, from where you sit and what you've experienced lately, what's the most positive thing you see going on in the world?
The most positive thing I see in the world is that people are really, really valuing connection. I think that was one thing that became so apparent in the pandemic. If you had the connections, you could just weather the storm so much better. And the people that didn't have the connections, not only did they suffer, but their children suffered. So I just see people really embracing their people, their tribe a little bit more, with a little more gusto and zest, and getting a little more clear about the relationships that don't work well for them. And learning to set boundaries around that.
That's a good point. I like how you mentioned both, right? Because it's easy sometimes to see, oh, this isn't working for me, this isn't good, or this is great. And then we focus one way or the other. But when we look at how we connect and what's good for us as connections, it really is kind of like cleaning out your closets in your house. Like, what's the good stuff to keep that I'm going to use again that's valuable? And what's cluttering it up and what's getting in the way of life?
Yeah, absolutely. Just like having too much stuff, having the wrong sort of people can keep you from moving forward, right?
Yeah, definitely. I have had that experience in life where I've thought, you know, being with the wrong people are keeping me from finding the right people. They're scaring the right people away. Absolutely. They're taking my attention, all that.
Yes, taking all the energy, not promoting healthy habits. So...
yeah. And we, I know later, are going to talk about some healthy habits with everything that you do to help people. So can't wait to get into that. So, Sarah, I got to know, what's your awkward thing you've had to own to live your best life?
I've really had to own my own mental health.
Okay.
And be really, you know, my anxiety, and the behaviors that came along with my anxiety. I've had to own my own trauma, in a really profound way. And through that, I think I've been able to reimagine how we need to take care of people with mental health issues. Not only from like my own personal experience, but witnessing experiences of my friends and family, and how that paradigm really for mental health, where we get meds and we go to counseling, is not enough. We know that at least a third of Americans have some sort of diagnosable mental health disorder, and very few people actually get help for it. So there's still some stigma around that, right?
Right.
And the other part of it is access. You
Sure.
have to be able to afford to go to a counselor to work through the things that might maybe be making you anxious or depressed or obsessed.
Right. Yeah, that's something I've been very aware of because I may have a change in my health insurance pending, and I think, oh, I hope I can keep my therapist because that's like my lifeline. And so it's one of those, well,
Yes.
do I live in a smaller place to afford that mental health? Because to me, it's that important. But I want to unpack this a little bit. So you had to own your mental health and confront anxiety. Was there a tipping point, or was there a place where you said, I can't live like this anymore, that made it obvious that you needed to accept that or come to terms with it?
I think that there were several tipping points, right?
Sure.
So it's like as you gain more awareness, the tipping point becomes, the standard becomes different for how you want to live your life and the tipping point that happens. But I think from a very young age, just witnessing kind of what was going on in my house and then going over to other kids' houses and seeing sometimes dysfunction and sometimes very happy homes, realizing that there were different ways to live, was really powerful for me and wanting me to maybe do things a little differently when I became an adult. I think I was one of those kids that witnessed a lot of things, and it instead of breaking me, I became more resolute in being different, doing different. I really coped with a lot of the strain and stress in my household through reading and making art from a very young age. And that's still habits that have stuck with me.
Wow.
So another tipping point would be after my son was born, pretty young mom. I was 22 when he was born and struggled with some postpartum depression. And went to go get help at a counselor's office, and her first response was to get me, she wanted me to get on antidepressants. And I just had this intuition that that was not the issue for me.
Sure.
It
Yeah.
wasn't really, didn't feel like a neurotransmitter thing. Something else felt off. So I had that ability to access Bastyr and did a more comprehensive workup and found that I had a thyroid problem.
Oh, wow.
And to this day, I know that my thyroid is off when I start having kind of dark thoughts, right? It's my gauge
Well,
of
that
needing to go and get that fixed,
Right.
get that checked.
Well, that's really smart that you trusted your intuition, because I think too often we are taught early on to kind of push your gut feelings aside, and now I hear a lot more people talk about their intuition and following it, but it sounds like you were much more in tune with your intuition from an early age.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people actually are tuned into their intuition. What we call them are highly sensitive people, right? And there's books on how to raise highly sensitive kids, and there's all kinds, like it's labeled almost like it's a disorder, but really what these people are intuitive. They're the people that walk into the room and they can feel something's off. and they feel everybody else's emotions, and they don't know that that's actually a gift. It feels very overwhelming, and they don't know how to control it.
Right.
So, it becomes a struggle.
Yeah. And that's one thing that's tough as parents. We're all raising kids who could have many different issues than we've ever experienced, and so we make judgments on how they should act based on how we would have felt in the situation. And I think hopefully people are more aware now because there is more information out there, but that we don't always know what kids are feeling or to what intensity level.
Yes. And I really encourage, like, especially with the little ones, when they start to have things like anxieties really early on, it's important to go get to work with a well-trained professional that can figure out things like nutrient deficiencies. For a lot of kiddos, it might be magnesium or iron. That can play into like this fatigue, depression, or even anxiety. So those can be really simple therapies that don't have side effects.
Right. Yeah. Now, I want to get into that more in just a second, but before we get too far away from your early childhood moments, it really resonated with me when you talked about going to other families' houses and seeing dynamics, because I remember that feeling myself. Like sometimes it would be like you'd go to a friend's house and there'd be parents chain smoking in the living room, which my parents didn't smoke, or parents arguing with each other, or different levels of communication, different levels of what was allowed to be watched on TV. There's all these different things.
Yes.
And it makes me so when you started to notice that and you became in tune with these different lifestyles, was there a point where you stood up and said, like, this is what how I need to take care of myself, or where you noticed that you shifted how you were dealing? It's hard maybe in teenage years because we're developing so much anyway.
Yeah. I think at 13, 14 years old, I realized that some of the things that were going down in my own house were it was bullshit. And like that anger started to really well up
Yeah.
in me. And so that was something that that was something I had to deal with. And I think anger and depression are really related to each other. So it was oscillating between anger and depression, often around that. So I think it became really apparent even early on, but at 13, 14, I had a pretty solid idea of like this wasn't how I wanted to do things, and started to really start thinking about what I wanted my life to look like
Yeah, wow.
and how I would maybe move forward in that.
Yeah, and that's amazing to have that awareness at such an early age. Because I remember having those thoughts when I was younger about what do I want my life to look like, or what should it look like? And my answer was, I have no clue. I don't know what to do. I don't, what should it be? And that was why I ended up living the life that I did. But I really admire that before even the age of driving, you were able to say, wait, this is, I want to be different.
I think a 13, 14-year-old human is a really complex thing. And if you think about it, there were, our generations, we're pushing childhood back more and more and more. And childhood for some kids extends into their 20s now, right? For even just like my grandpa's generation, at 13 years old, he had his own apartment, he had a job. He was a fully functioning adult at that point. So, I think a lot of it has to do with circumstance, how much you're pushed, whether that be with, I don't think that sometimes always trauma has to be a bad thing, because it can push us into the thing that we're passionate about, or the thing, our life's purpose. But definitely positive pushing is much more preferred over traumas. But
Right.
there's different ways that we can really grow, and it kind of depends on those circumstances, if the adults around your life are asking really interesting questions and wanting and curious, right, to pull that out of you.
Right. Yeah, I remember when my oldest son was getting to that 14, 15-year-old age, and I remember having this kind of tug of war with this teenager in the house. I remember saying, "You should be restless. You should be wanting to go out and explore the world. You're in this age where you are old enough and have enough experience to want to be going out on your own, yet you're kind of chained to this, I'm not 18 yet. I can't just go do my thing." And these feelings you're having, those are totally natural because historically you would be out, hunting on your own at this point. Yeah.
Doing stuff,
Right.
throwing rocks or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So how well was that received when you said, my life's going to be different?
I think that there was, there was definitely arguments. I think my parents did the best that they could to kind of shape me, into being, a human that was thoughtful. I know my dad in particular was really wanted to ingrain having some sort of a spiritual life, and that's still very important to him. And my mother wanted me to have the experiences, so travel was very important to her. And going and experiencing different cultures, and even just driving across town to try a different type of cuisine was important to her. So I think that there were some struggles there. I think where it came from the most was just I had a stepfather that was very black and white. He wanted, things to be a certain way and felt I should be doing certain things. And that was where really where the major conflict came in,
Gotcha.
around that. And a lot of my anger was directed towards him.
That's,
So
yeah. And
it
it,
wasn't a good, it wasn't a good combination at
well,
all.
and whether you saw it at the time or not, or whether it's reflective, I like that you can see how each thing that your parent valued brought a different perspective into your upbringing. Like, this is what mom valued, this is what she instilled, this is what dad valued, this is what he instilled. Then there was that other guy,
I think it was, wildly different between my parents. They were about as opposite as you could be. My dad was kind of a little bit of a workaholic, like really valued his career, and church was a big thing for him, so he went to church 3 times a week. And my mom was driving Harleys and smoking doobies and, doing all the wild things. And both of them are, very unique, and at times it felt like I had to be kind of a different kid for both of them, and
Right.
have to swing from one to another. And so, but I think that they stretched me in such a way that I had this whole bandwidth of possibilities, and it's been because of that I've been able to land where I need to be.
Right. Yeah, we have these things that we go through, and our experience in being brought up. But good or bad, we wouldn't be where we're at if we didn't have that positive experience, the turmoil, the challenge, whatever it is. Like, that's all been the fire that's kind of forged our mettle, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think after, I've lost 2 brothers, and both of them have been to mental health illnesses. And I think after I lost my second brother, I just really became acutely aware. It was like in the middle of the pandemic, so it just made it a lot more laser focused on this mental health piece is something that needs to be looked at with a much deeper lens, and we need to come up with solutions for people that are accessible, and we need to start looking at it from a more of a holistic perspective if
Right.
we really want to make gains in that realm.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry that you've lost them. That's not easy. I can't imagine. I'm glad to hear that it's like sounds like it strengthened your resolve in, hey, we need to fix this so that other people can have better access.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So with both of them, addiction issues, and with my older brother, my younger brother was an accident, a car accident on the side of Mount Rainier,
Oh.
very sudden, very traumatic. He was young. And I think I was young. I was, dealing with my own postpartum. I had just had a baby and was dealing with my own postpartum issues. And I think that kind of all got stuffed in a box and shoved in a closet.
Yeah.
Right?
There are things that we have to do just to get through sometimes. And it's like,
Yeah.
I can't deal with that. I've got to come back to it later. And at the time, we probably never planned to come back to it.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. And then with my elder brother, it was kind of this unfolding. Like you could tell he wasn't quite right. Like his skin color was starting to change and he was more like his mobility wasn't getting well. And then he disclosed to me that he had cancer. And so I ran with that story that he had esophageal cancer, and would call. He ended up in the ICU, and I called the nurses to find out what his status was and what was going on. And the nurse practitioner ended up calling me back and saying, "Well, I've combed his charts. And I can't find any record that Neil has cancer. What he does have is liver failure, and it's due to his drinking. And so his choice was really to stop drinking and get a liver transplant. And from what I understand, that what transpired was that was not what he chose. Now, looking at his situation, his chosen family was the people that he hung out with at the bar.
Right.
And so he was really surrounded, and that's, I think, kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier, as he was really surrounded by this community that I think really loved him profoundly because he was a jovial spirit. He was a lot of fun to be around, right? Like he brought the life to the party, but wasn't able to support him in this way that he really needed in order to extend his life.
I think that's a really good way to look at it because, it'd be easy to see them as evil, right? Like as this horrible people that kept him in this space. But there's also that, like they, for their own reasons, don't have the ability to support or to step out of that space and know them in a different way. And a lot of times, we hear it all the time. If you want to make these big changes in your life, you have to change who you're around, what you're doing, because they're just going to perpetuate, and not maliciously, just that's the life that everybody's in. That's where they know each other.
Yeah. And it can and that can like really be extended to people that are raised in very high need religions, where there is like they become ostracized
Yeah.
if they don't subscribe to certain beliefs or behaviors. And it can be seen in work cultures. It can be seen in a lot of different ways. And for him, it was just the, his group of friends. I don't look at them as good or bad. I think honestly, most humans are trying to do the best they can.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. Yeah. Well, Sarah, you have shared so much of your journey. I'm curious, how have you now taken all of this and used it to lean into make this your superpower where mental health is what you do? You have a business, you have a practice where you are helping people with this. How did you make that transition to this is my life?
So, I decided I worked at a large nonprofit center where I was doing functional medicine for a lot of years, had wonderful, wonderful mentors there that really taught me the ins and outs. I saw a lot of complicated cases and decided that I was going to really move more into private practice so I could focus on this. And what has kind of transpired from this is I have written a workbook that I use to do workshops with, and starting in the March 2024, all I'm going to start doing regular retreats so that people will be able to dive in a little bit deeper on this. But this workbook is called The Missing Piece of Mental Health Care. And really what I've found as I go through and do this, I refine this. As I get more research, I refine this. And I'm working on as well writing a book that incorporates a lot of these concepts with just some of the personal stories that I have around that. So we know that nervous system and trauma work is very important. I think that in the, especially like in the social media space, you see a lot of people really exploring that on a deeper level. And I think that that is amazing and a really foundational piece. I think the pieces that often get missed when looking at mental health can be gut health. 90% of our serotonin is made in our gut. A lot of that is for gut motility, but it will also go to our brain and our nervous system as well. And serotonin is that happy neurotransmitter. That's like our number one prescribed meds are our SSRIs, which is a type of antidepressant that targets serotonin. So that's a big, big thing. And those drugs, what they will do is they'll recycle the serotonin that's in your system. But eventually, if you don't have the right building blocks, you can't make more serotonin. And that's a lot of times why those meds will stop working for people after a couple of years.
Okay, this is why, if I'm understanding this right, then this is why people like they do great for a while and then they have to go get their meds redone because things just stop. And that then you go through this
Working.
period of disruption where you're like, oh, we were good, but what happened? And
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that I will do with a lot of my one-on-one clients is this advanced nutritional testing that looks for deficiencies in antioxidants, B vitamins, minerals, that sort of thing. And that can be a huge game changer because what you're doing when you're looking at that is you're switching from, I'm just going to give you this agent that will change your brain chemistry to, I'm going to give you the building blocks so your body can make its own chemicals. It
okay.
can start making its own neurotransmitters.
Wow. Okay. Now you're talking about things where people have to get blood work done. I imagine you have to get some lab work done. And I am not a medical person, so I'm probably butchering the description here. Do people have to be local to come to you to get this done? What's your service area? Because we got people listening from all over.
So I am licensed in several states. I will work with people all over the US. I have systems set up so that I can get lab work for people for most of the states, with the exception New York, New Jersey, and Rhode Island are not able to get lab work for those folks, but everybody else I can pretty much get lab work for. And as long as people aren't really wanting me to prescribe meds for them, I can work with them from like a nutritional, nervous system, gut health, mitochondrial standpoint. Licensed in Texas and Indiana, and I do a lot of thyroid management, hormone management. And I will do some antidepressants for people as well in those states.
Okay, so
So,
the best thing would be for people to reach out to you, see if you're licensed in their state, and then you tell them kind of where to go get the lab done, and then you redo.
Yeah. So I offer everyone a discovery call where we can talk for about 15 minutes, and ask a lot of curious questions about what your goals are. And I'm pretty fairly straightforward. If I don't feel like it can help, or if I feel like people need to do something different, I will send them to the right place to get that work done. So I'll help them find the resources that they need.
Oh, that's great. And
I think another big piece, for mental health is this detox piece. We see more and more these toxin exposures, and air quality is a big one. That's, something that we deal regularly with in the Pacific Northwest in the summertime, and those cumulative exposures to the air can actually start changing our gut and how our brain works.
Wow. Okay. Now, before we get too far, the links are in the episode notes and descriptions, but just in case people are driving down the road and have perfect memory, tell them where to find you online and with your website and social media, the best places for people to support you.
My website is entouragefm.com. My company is called Entourage Health LLC, and my Instagram handle is entourage underscore functional underscore medicine. And I have also a Facebook page, Entourage Functional Medicine. So, but I think my Instagram is probably, I'm also on LinkedIn for as Sarah Weaver. So any way that you feel is the best medium for you to connect, there's lots of ways to get a hold of me.
Now, you mentioned these retreats that you're going to start doing. What would people expect at a retreat like that?
So the one that I'm looking at doing, it's really about bringing in these elements of what we're talking about. Around creating this environment where you can explore all these different elements for mental health. So we will start with, I think one thing that is often missing from people's lives and that gives a lot of meaning can be ritual. And so we start with like opening ceremony. We'll have things like sound bath that just brings a little bit of sacredness
Yeah.
to the event, regular gentle movement with yoga. I am all about the dopamine, and my favorite way to get the dopamine is to have an adventure. So each one of these retreats will have some sort of adventure component. So the one that is coming up in the spring will be like a hike on Mayan ruins and then going to a private Quixote and diving into the water in this cave. So just something to like get your brain out of like every day, oh my God, my grocery list, my, I gotta all the tasks, right? And just get you back to center of like who you are and all of life's possibilities. I also bring along with me a setup to do heart math. And heart math is really interesting, something you can do at home. It's a small investment. You can just use your cell phone, actually. You get an app, and I have a more professional setup, but the home setup will link up to your ear and actually reads how your nervous system is doing. So I'll often do this. Yeah, I'll often do this with my clients while they're talking about their life, and we will watch how their nervous system reacts when they talk about their mother-in-law
Oh,
or their
that
job.
sounds fun.
And
I know there's a
then we'll
few
also,
buzzwords that would just spike on my tongue.
It gives you, it's really amazing stuff because it gives you this really direct feedback. And I think it's really important for, folks like myself who have had highly traumatic events that happen in their childhood, they're used to operating in high stress mode. That's normal for them. And so, and I go back and I look at people, I'll ask them questions like, what was your mom like? What do you think your mom was like when she was pregnant with you? Was she stressed out? And a lot of times people actually have a good idea of how their mom was. And that really starts to develop what your nervous system is like,
Wow.
right? And so a lot of people are born and their poor little nervous systems are all wired to be in fight or flight mode before they even took their first breath.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm picturing like what you would see when a polygraph test is taken. Like certain things are going to stress you out if you're trying to lie, or certain things that you talk about or have to address in life would affect your nervous system. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting to hear it said, and that there's this technology that you can just put in your ear, and then all of a sudden it's like,
Yeah.
look at how you feel right now just because you're thinking about that situation
Yeah.
or telling that story.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what's really neat is to have them go through and talk about their life, but then teach them a technique that they can bring their nervous system down and to be really conscious about talking through how that feels. Like, where are they feeling? What sensations are they feeling in their body? Do they notice, like, gosh, when they started to talk about that stressful event, their jaw started to clench up, or was it their shoulders? Or did they start getting that ringing back in their ears? Our body really tells us a lot of things if we're willing to listen.
Well, that's what I was wondering as you were starting to explain that. I thought, I wonder how many people have tuned out, and even myself have tuned out the warning signs from our body that it's like, I didn't even realize how tense I was. And I ignored the signs and the feelings and the physical things going on in my body because you're so used to just feeling that way in that moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what all of hustle culture is built on, right?
Yeah.
I think as Americans, we're raised to kind of push through a lot of those things for
Definitely.
sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you one more thing here in a second, but first, is there anything else you want to make sure we share before we go? And I'm going to ask you what you would challenge our listeners with to own their awkward.
Okay, one more share I think that really is important when people are trying to solve the puzzle for mental health is to look at mitochondria, which are what makes our cellular energy, and there are things that you can do to really help foster healthy mitochondria, and some of that is absolutely free, like fasting. Like jumping in a cold body of water. Those things make you feel alive. They brace you, right? But you feel like a
Yeah, I
afterwards.
hear people just swear by the cold plunge. I have a couple different friends that do it every week, and they're like, you gotta do the cold plunge. And I'm like, I'm a wimp when it comes to that, but I believe
Well,
you.
it's
I believe you.
yeah. It's supposed to be a little bit hard. But I'll tell you what, Andy, the next time you feel a little bit depressed, I would challenge you to turn the cold water on in your shower and see if that just wakes you up a little bit, wakes your brain up a little bit.
I will try that. I definitely
Okay. Let
have
me know how it goes.
opportunity to feel depressed, and so I will take that.
As far as owning your awkward, I would challenge listeners to actually take time out of your day every day to know yourself a little bit better. And whether that is keeping, a weird art journal where you just put like the crazy thoughts that you have down and shut it and leave it alone, or if it is going for a walk in a beautiful spot so that you can quiet your mind, whether it's using a free meditation app. Just 10 or 15 minutes every day can make a huge difference. You think about how much that adds up over a course of a year. Just taking 10 minutes to do that, you can really make a lot of gains and really change your whole life.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point. I like that you mentioned just that it doesn't need to be hours every day, just a little bit every day when you add up how long that was after a year. You ended up spending hours on improving yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Sarah, this has been so much good information, so much inspiration. I really appreciate it. I love that you're willing to open up and talk about mental health. Because like you said, there are still stigmas around getting the help or obstacles to getting the access to the help. And so there's
Yeah.
always more work to do. I really appreciate everything you're doing and the approach you're taking. I think it's so important.
Well, thanks for helping me get the word out, Andy. Appreciate it.
For sure. Everyone out there, visit Sarah's website, follow her on Instagram, connect with her on LinkedIn, reach out, watch for the retreats. They're going to be amazing. And don't hesitate to see how she can help you or help someone you know live your best life just by feeling. Wouldn't it feel great just to feel great all the time? That's the thing,
Yeah.
right?
You don't have to wake up tired. That's
Right.
not normal, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be waking up, right? You don't
Yeah.
have to hit the snooze alarm 20 times. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And I think that's one thing that we don't know how good can feel. And so we just feel like this is life. And yet, if we knew better, we would never come back to where we were.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's not only in our physical health, but it's also in our relationships. It's also in our spiritual health. And it all takes time to sit, that dedicated time to sit and explore that.
It does. Well, Sarah, thank you so much. Everybody else, go out there this week, own your mental health, and own your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.